रिद्धिमा, तो रिद्धिमा तलवार है। शिष्या नो, एनी वे द क्वेश्चन इज सो नाइस दैट आई कैन नॉट इग्नोर दिस क्वेश्चन, ऑल्दो द क्वेश्चन इज नॉट हियर। An evil Kali wanted to destroy Nala, due to which he committed mistakes. Do you believe in such evils as shown in the story in today's world? It's a very important question. My own answer is yes, I do believe. This world is a world of great battle. Whether one wants to enter into the battle or not, the moment you come on the earth, you have already decided to join the battle. And this battle is a battle between good and evil. It's also a fact. There is a constant invasion of evil on every effort which goes upwards. It's not only in this story. For example, Buddha. I don't know if you read the story of Buddha. Anybody has read the story of Buddha? Yeah? Can you lift up your hand who has read the life of Buddha? Only two people. Yes, one. Have you read the story of Buddha? Yes, all of you? All right. Now, I don't know if you have read the story so well as to find out and tell me, where do you find the invasion of evil in his life movements? Have you read this portion? No. There is what is called Mara Yuddha in the life of Buddha. Mara is an evil force. Buddha himself has told this story according to the texts which are available to us. When he was doing his tapasya, and he had very much neared his goal, at that time, Buddha says, Mara, the evil force, came to attack him. All kinds of emotions of anger, lust, desire, ambition, lobha, moha, matsara, ambava, all these tendencies invaded him. And he had to fight the battle valiantly. It's a very important story of Buddha's life. It is only when he conquered this force that he then entered into the state of nirvana. So you can see, even at that moment of life, when you are very near the goal, even at that point, the force of evil comes in life. Nala's story is very important because the story of Damayanti and Nala can be recognized as a story of human life as a whole. It's one of the greatest stories of the world from this point of view. If you want to analyze the life, the joy and the sorrow of life, the majesty of life and the misery of life, the battle between the good and the evil, every aspect of the story is symbolic in the story of Nala and Damayanti. There's also a question here about Nala's story. Do you believe that a swan represents the supreme love? Now again, it's a question of symbolism. Swan stands in our whole mythology as the inmost soul of love and delight. what you cannot speak in words, what you cannot communicate by any means, you can communicate through your soul. Now, Nala and Damayanti story is a symbolic story in which it is said Nala fell in love with Damayanti, Damayanti fell in love with Nala through the help of swan, Hansa. What does it mean? There was inner communication between the two. It was the attraction of the soul to the soul. Merely hearing the name of Damayanti stirred the deepest layers of the being of Nala, and vice versa. Every aspect of the story is a symbolic story. The way in which Nala is invaded by Kali at the height of the glory is also a very important element in human life. When you arrive at a great stage of comfort in human life and people say, now I want to rest, it is at that moment that the Kali begins to act. And it has many ways of acting. One has to be very careful in life about what is called in yoga adverse force, hostile force. In human life, you will find so many small little things happening. Everything is going on well, suddenly one guest will come to your house. He'll just drop in to tell one little thing to you, exactly what you do not want to hear. Only one little thing. The son wants that father should not know one little thing which he has done. And exactly when he is talking to his father very nicely, somebody will drop in and say, oh, your son, this is your son. Oh, he did this yesterday. And finish, he will go away. Damage is done. Human life is extremely subtle. The forces of life are so intertwined. The good and evil are so intertwined. That is why it is said, you should be very vigilant. Tapasya has to be done all the time. Particularly you will see, in tea parties, you have to be very careful. Excursions, you have to be very careful. You know, these are the things in which life is very smooth, very nice. But 2, 3 people, 4 people will come inside. They will just whisper a little and the whole evening is finished. Human life is a web, a constant weaving. Various forces are constantly woven. And we may think this happens by chance. No, it doesn't happen merely by chance. In fact, nothing in the world is chance. We all meet together because of so many circumstances working together. Why is it that mantra was able to inject the poison into the mind of Kaikeyi just on that day when Rama was to be coronated? Neither one day earlier nor one day later. It just happened at that time and prevented a big event. Why should it happen? Why should it happen on that day when Sita wants that deer, that golden deer? Why should it happen? Everything was going so smoothly, the life was so beautiful, even in the forest. And the golden deer appears. A surprising fact takes place. And why should she feel at that time, oh, I must have it? Why? Why should she implore Rama to have it, to get it for her? just a negligence, you might say, of a few moments, and the whole life is disturbed. There is this force of Kali in this world, and we have to be very careful in this world. There's only one way of conquering Kali. First, to be extremely humble. Humility is the one thing which, when manifested, makes you conquer Kali. Whenever you have adverse conditions of life, we must remember this remedy. Be absolutely humble. Second, find out a vibration in your being. This is more difficult. In your own being, there is a vibration. Actually, if you see your mind and heart, it is nothing but a seat of vibrations. The whole world is nothing but vibrations. And these vibrations are constantly interacting with each other. A student here, for example, may be inattentive. And usually the teacher says, why are you so much inattentive? As if the fault lies with the student. But no. In your own heart, you see that you are somewhere not concentrated. Every good teacher will find out that when he himself is distracted, there is distraction among his students. The moment he becomes really concentrated in his own mind, on his own heart, there will be stillness all around. There is a vibration of concentration. If therefore there is any disturbance in your life by any force, see that force vibrating in your own being somewhere. Repair that vibration there and the situation will be under control. The second method. The third method is two greatest advices. Do not act at that time from egoistic assertion. When there is an attack of evil force, do not react with egoistic assertion. And secondly, make a sacrifice of something that you desire very much. Balidan. In our Indian tradition, of course, Balidan is constantly demanded of us. And this is the inner reason, inner psychological reason, yogic reason. Why all yogis, when you have difficulty, they say you perform a yajna. Now, yajna is a very ceremonial sort of thing, very mechanical sort of thing. It may succeed, it may not succeed. But it is symbolic. If you can really make a sacrifice inwardly, then it causes a real rebellion. So do not act in egoistic assertion and make a sacrifice. If you meet all these things together, then life comes under your control. And that is what is called truly Swarajya. You are in control of yourself. The story of Nala and Damayanti is basically a story of Swarajya. When Kali is conquered, ultimately, Damayanti's sadhana, Nala's sadhana, if you read the whole story from this point of view, there was a tremendous sadhana, tremendous tapasya done by both Nala and Damayanti. They go up to the extreme point. When Nala has completely given up any possibility of finding Damayanti again in life, completely sacrificed. When Damayanti is completely sure, she has done everything to find out Nala, there is no way by which she can find Nala. At that stage, when everything is lost, everything is gained. This is one of the great messages of the story of Nala and Damayanti. Therefore, it gives us some courage. Do not lose heart. In India, there is a very important theory. If you read Greek literature, the most important thing in Greek literature is what is called tragedy. The greatest dramas in Greek literature are dramas of tragedy. Sophocles, for example, the greatest dramatist of Greek literature, in every drama he has pointed out, human life is basically tragic. At the end of everything, there is zero. At the end of everything, there is darkness. Oedipus, for example, a great king, ultimately he becomes blind. And he dies by saying, light, more light, light, more light, but without gaining light. In Indian literature, there is hardly any tragedy. It is very important. You take all the dramas, even Mahabharata, which is a great tragedy in a sense, the last is Shanti Parva. The end is not tragedy, the end is Shanti. Shakuntala, for example, is almost a tragedy. But at the end, there is reconciliation. In Nala and Damayanti, the whole life is tragic. At the end is a reunion and a victory. This is because in India, we discovered that all tragedies arise because of the conflict between good and evil. But this conflict is not ultimate. It is not the final stage. The battle ends ultimately in the victory of good over evil. On one condition, you should persist your battle. Tragedy comes only if you cease to battle, but persist in your battle. Victory is certain. This is the message of the entire literature of India. Let me now come to the next question. If Dushyant really loved Shakuntala, then what was the need to hand over the ring as a token of remembrance? I think it's not correct. There is no name here. But the story is not, this is not the story. He did not give the rings as a token of remembrance. It was simply a gift of love. We now talk of remembrance because of another event which takes place in the drama. I don't know if you read the story sufficiently well to tell me how Shakuntala takes recourse to the ring as a token of remembrance. When exactly it happens, how it happens. Can anybody tell me this aspect of the story? When does Shakuntala refer to the ring as a token of remembrance?
When she tries all methods of making him remember about the past days, she goes in that same dress, she tries...
Quite right. It is when she wanted to remind Dushyant of everything, to shake him out of his forgetfulness, that she refers to the ring. And this is also a part with the curse that was given to her by Durvasa. The real story is very often this aspect is not told in the story. Even the two films of Vishantaram on Shakuntala, this particular episode is missing. When Durvasa gives a curse to Shakuntala, that the one whom you are remembering and you are lost in memory, he will forget you. And the two friends of Shakuntala, they run after the Rishi to show the method by which the curse could be mitigated. So he says, if she can show something by which he can be made to remember some personal gift, then the memory will come back. Now this also is symbolic. We all have forgotten our soul. And the question is, how can we be reminded that we have forgotten our soul? Something which has happened in our life in a very striking manner, if you can go back and remember it, your entire soul realization will come. That is why very often many yogis, when they teach their disciples, they try to take them to their intimate experience of life, which had happened just near the soul of the individual. And then the memory comes back. So it was not given by Dushyant on his own as a token of remembrance, but it was used by Shakuntala, at least attempted to be used, because when she tries to see the ring, it was already gone. There are many other questions, but I think I have got many other questions also in the second level. Durvasa ka shaap kahan tak uchit hai? Shilpa Johari. Shriya?
Shilpa Johari.
No? Yes, good. Durvasa ka shaap kahan tak uchit hai? I don't think it was proper at all. This is actually a very important question. Is there something like curse? Has it effects? Should one curse? Should one be cursed? Should one be subjected to curse? In our present scientific world, the whole idea of curse and to be cursed and so on has no meaning. And therefore, the modern student, when they read this kind of a story, where Durvasa gives a curse, and that the whole story depends upon that curse, and the whole story is thrown out of the bag. Something irrelevant. But these stories are not written only for modern age. They are written also for postmodern age. And also post-postmodern age. These stories are eternal stories. They are valid for all time, whether you believe them or not. Is there something like curse? Answer is yes. It is as simple as saying, is there anybody who gets angry? Answer is yes. Anger is something not brought from somewhere else. In all our hearts and our minds, there is an emotion of anger. And curse is nothing but an expression of anger. The question is, has anger any effect? It is so simple as that. Has anger any effect? The answer is yes. If somebody is angry with you, what happens? If one is angry with you, sometimes anger is like fire. You can't stand the anger of somebody. You go home and your mother starts scolding you. What effect it has got on your delicate heart? It's a simple kind of anger. Only anger of the mother is a simple anger. Anger of the husband towards wife and anger of the wife against the husband is a much more serious anger, much more serious effect. No, it's a fact. Even the bravest man cannot stand the anger of his wife. It's a fact. It's a scientific fact. No? Tremendous power. And vice versa also. A teacher's anger towards a pupil is also very powerful. You may be a beloved student of a teacher, and one day teacher does not smile at you, and imagine the condition in which you are the whole day. The teacher whom you love, whom you revere, the teacher who loves you very much, and one day when you go to him, he does not even look at you. Imagine the condition of the pupil the whole day. You feel like dying the whole day. Now, if anger has an effect, then there is a question of expression of that anger. And the words and the effect. Our Indian psychologists have made a great study of words and the effect of sound. Sound has a tremendous effect in the world, just as light. Without light, you cannot see. Similarly, without sound, there is no continuity. Just as without light, you cannot see. Similarly, without sound, there is no continuity. Now, this is a great secret of human life. All continuities in physical life are because of the sound. There is a constant continuity. This was the reason of what is called japa in Indian yoga. What is japa? You take a word, repeat that word. By continuity of the repetition, a state of consciousness is created. And submit. All japa is nothing but the application of the magic of sound. Sound is magic, just as light is also magic. Nobody knows what is light actually. Light is light, but this is a miracle on the earth. What is light is a miracle. Color is a miracle. Sound is a miracle. These are the basic miracles of life, which are so similar to us, so familiar to us, that we don't even see that they are strange, that they are miracles. But they are miracles. So similarly, a word which is spoken with a great force, it continues. And it has a great effect. We speak of blessings and people say it is simply a ceremony. It can be a ceremony, but it may not be. A real blessing received by somebody in the real heart with a real sense, and a real blessing given by a great heart, by a great consciousness, is a tremendous sort of support. Basically, we only see the physical, but physical is nothing but conglomeration of constant sound, constant light. In fact, when we speak of Pancha Mahabhuta, this Pancha Mahabhuta is nothing but Pancha Tanmatras. And Pancha Tanmatras are nothing but vibrations. Now, these vibrations constitute the whole physical world. So if such a huge world is nothing but tanmatras, then any word which is spoken, and word spoken by a particular person, who has got a great force of consciousness, it's a tremendous event. That is why one should live a life in which there's a constant blessing on you. That is why in the Veda it is said, it is a big prayer, let all people see me with the eyes of a friend. Mitravat. Let the whole creation look at you all the time with the eyes of a friend. Ma vidyushavahe. Let there be no enemy anywhere. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Let there be peace, peace, peace always. This is the real reason why in Indian culture we have emphasized these vibrations. If India has survived in spite of all troubles, it is because of the operation of this knowledge. Whether we like it or not, it is going on. In India, still the corners exist where the great aspirations are still kept alive and the vibrations are around. So my answer to this question is, can there be a curse? Answer is yes. Now second question is, was it right on the part of Durvasa? My answer is no. You may have a great power, but a power which is used under impulse. Durvasa does not write for himself a good biography by having cursed Shakuntala and created this problem. So according to me, Durvasa should not have cursed and should not have produced this kind of problem. And therefore, there is one warning in this. Remember, when you grow up, your words will have effect. Even one not has an effect. As you grow up in power hierarchy, one day you may become Prime Minister of the country. And your mere word yes or no will make a great effect on the destiny of the nation. It's quite possible. Your one word will have an effect. Therefore, be very careful. Knowing Durvasa's sharp, remember that you yourself will not commit the fault, the mistake which was committed by Durvasa. You can create a havoc in the life of the nation merely by one word. There are many good questions, but I want to run faster. Already we are giving 6 o'clock already. Only half an hour is left now. If love is a magnificent feat of poetic imagination, is love a magnificent feat of poetic imagination? If not, then why is it suppressed in reality? The author of this question is not written here, but I am sure it's a good question. Is love a mere poetic imagination? Or is it something genuine, true, real? And if so, why is it suppressed in reality? The question of love is a very difficult subject in the human life. I don't know what hairy love is, because it appears that we have a few examples of Romeo and Juliet, Shirin and Farhad. And then we have stories like Dushyant and Shakuntala, which is also a love story. Nal and Damyanti is a... There's also a love story of a kind. But I don't know if any one of you can give me a definition of love, because it's one of the most difficult subjects of human life. I don't know actually, because statistically one has to verify. It looks sometimes one way, sometimes looks other way around. That is your view. Your view. What is love? Can anybody try here to define love? Because the question is love a magnificent feat of poetic imagination? Have you heard it? Love is caring and sharing. I like the answer that she has given. And with young people particularly, this question of love should be understood very sympathetically. Particularly because today there's hush-hush about love. And there's no need to be that kind of hush-hush about it. The role that love is played in human life is so great and so important. And the tapasya that is needed in love is so important that children, students should know the real meaning of love and what it really means. Let me analyze for you, because what she has told me just now, caring, sharing, these two words are very important. Caring and sharing implies what is called mutuality. This is another word, mutuality. He gave the example of mother and the child. Why that relationship is of intense love, perhaps uncomparable with any other form of love. Why? Because there is a spontaneous flow of warmth from the heart of the mother. And on the side of the child, there is a tremendous need for warmth. The child needs warmth and the mother gives warmth. The mutuality is complete. Both need each other absolutely, and then both give to each other helplessly, you might say. So, Vance, yes, you want to say something?
So, can we put the word trust into it? Son.
Can you come here? I cannot hear you. Come here.
So, can you put the word trust?
Please come here.
If we don't have trust for each other,
yes. Very
caring, very sharing.
Very good. No, I fully agree. You are right. So let us put in our analysis the element of trust. So first, mutuality. Second is the element of trust. Any other element in love? The only two as far as just now, mutuality and trust. Is that all that constitutes love? Yes. Magnet. Excellent.
Love is not magnet and it is not love.
Good.
Yeah.
There should be magnetism. So love is magnetism. A magnet or magnet? Madness also and magnetic also. Alright, this is also an element which has to be taken note of. Any other element? Yes. Sacrifice. Alright, we shall at present we'll be making a note as to how many points are there in love, because it's a very important subject for young people, and since it has come up, I would like to dwell upon it. Because young people should really analyze love properly. It's a very important subject of education. In fact, elderly people should explain to the children what is love. Instead of punishing the children for calling in love, which is barbarism, you should really understand the children. You see the needs of love and then nourishing the love in the right manner. And as she pointed out, sacrifice. If love cannot lead you to sacrifice, you should put a question mark against the love. It's very important that it matters. Any other points? The most important element in love is joy. It's a simple thing, but if everything is there may be madness, there may be magnetic force, there may be trust. But if there is no joy in it, it is not love. It is said that love is actually a manifestation of ananda. All love is basically a movement towards union. Unfolding of souls. It's a movement of ananda, warmth, love, joy, mutuality, trust, sacrifice. Put all these things together and you should tell children, you should tell young people, love is not merely a magnificent feat of poetic imagination. It's not something to be suppressed. But love, like life, is a dangerous journey. That much we have to tell everybody. But dangerous, therefore, you should not hesitate. You should understand it is a responsible journey. To love and to be loved is great. Sometimes, as I said, there is madness, you can't help it. But if you are not careful to take into account all the aspects of love, then you may have difficulties in your relationships. Tagore had said at one point, which is very important, very significant, the greatest problems of human life are problems of relationship. There are many problems of human life, but nothing is as important and as difficult as the problem of relationship. If there is one thing in which human beings are so brittle, so fragile, so delicate, it is in the field of relationship also. And it is in the movement of relationship that all the elements that you have analyzed now come into the picture. You can fall in love, but you maintain love. Hazaron pyar karte hain, nibhana kisko aata hai. Now, there was a big song at one time. Who knows how to sustain love? You can fall in love, but how do you sustain it? The art of sustenance requires sacrifice, as Anjali said. If you cannot sacrifice, you can't sustain. Madness may remain for a minute, for an hour, for a day, for a year, for 5 years, 10 years, 100 years, but not for 200 years. Madness is not enough. Understanding. That's very important, understanding. It's a tremendous art to understand. Good. We have now touched the kernel of the problem. Love is not of one level. There are many levels of love. There is bodily love, there is vital love, there is mental love, spiritual love. There are different kinds of love. And the higher you go, ethereal it becomes. Much more intangible physically, but much more concrete spiritually. The greatest enemy of true love is impurity, mixtures. It is very easy to fall in love with a woman who is very rich. It is easier. Because it's not only riches, it's not only love, it's also the riches also is an attracting force. And one must be quite pure. And very often his purities are not easily understood. You find that, for example, many students fall in love with their teachers. It's a fact, men, women, they fall in love with their teachers. In fact, the whole story of My Fair Lady is a story of a student falling in love with the teacher. Yes. Why? Because it is attraction of the intellectual power. It's not exactly love. It's admiration. It's not merely love. It is admiration. And then very often when the actual life starts, then that is not sustained. And then there is a collapse. Because there was an impurity of that particular relationship. It was based upon a certain level, mixed up with physical and vital love. And mental love is very difficult to sustain. To sustain mental love, both should be extremely refined in intellectual powers, which may not be available for a long time. It wears out. When the teacher himself, who is admirable, is found to be very poor in life, in many respects, admiration collapses. The varnish of love falls away. That is because it is not pure love. It's varnished love. So what she said is very true. Unless and until there is a constant purification of your consciousness, in which you say that you love for the sake of mutuality, you have to see that the joy bursts out of mutuality. It's a tremendous tapasya. And that is why in India, some of the greatest examples of love are examples of tapasya. Ram and Sita is a great example of love. What a tremendous tapasya it was. Nal and Damayanti the same, what a great tapasya it was. Purification is the hallmark of true love. Where there is no purity, mutuality cannot be sustained. The real joy cannot be sustained. The true relationship cannot be sustained. Let's now go forward. It is good to stop at love. Why should... that's a good way. Here also is the question. In all these stories, why is it that woman has to sacrifice? First of all, these stories are written in the world where man is tyrant. Our present world is a tyrannical world. We have still not become civilized. Whereas we are now about to become civilized, when women like you are becoming so conscious and begin to assert themselves, saying, why? It's a long cycle, as Sri Aurobindo says. Humanity is only 1 year old. It's infant. Humanity is only an infant. In terms of civilization, we are very primitive. And in primitive times, brutality is power. And largely human beings, men, are brutal. It's not the fault of man either. It's the fault of nature's distribution of energy. We are all nature's children. Therefore, in Sankhya, it is said, basically, there is no man in this world. All are women. Basically, because that is why it is said, Prakriti, all this is Prakriti. The whole world is nothing but Prakriti. We are also children of Prakriti. We are all women, basically. Yes. Yes. So there is all, basically, And then you say, in feminine energy, there is a male energy and a female energy. But all this is female, basically. Yeah, but this is their question, that you say the woman is a Shakti, is goddess, and then you tyrannize over her. That is correct criticism. It's correct, actually. Women have to suffer because they are the mothers of men. No? It's a fact. Mothers are, all women are mothers of men. Therefore, if men are tyrannical, mothers have to be soft so that this tyranny is wiped out. Yes? Yes, quite right. Yes. Very true. Yes? Yes, that is true. I mean, women have got many great virtues and this power of suffering. That is true. You are right, actually. Actually, one can write a big poem on woman. And, yes, you are right, absolutely. You are right, absolutely. No, you are right. All this is love. As Sri Aurobindo says, the world is nothing but a kiss of Radha and Krishna. Yes, you are right. Even in atoms, everything is love. Vibration of love.
Very true.
All right, I think we can finish now in this very beautiful praise of the woman.
It is, why at one point of time in a relationship one feels so helpless?
Helplessness. You know, there is one very good author in India called Manoj Das. A good friend of mine. And he told me, he said, if you read my stories, there's only one thing. Helplessness. He said a human being comes to terms with himself only in a state of helplessness. So the question that you ask, why is it that a human being at a given time begins to experience helplessness? Whenever a human being does his very best, at the end he finds that he is helpless. By no human strength can you resolve the human problems. The human problems can be solved only when, in a state of helplessness, you allow a greater power to come into you and to manifest those. So, if you find helplessness at a given stage, you remember you have come to a very crucial stage of your life. It is a stage where we must open the gates to a strength which is not yours. A strength which has to come to you from above. It's a good experience. If you have any time, you should thank yourself. Yes?
What
do we have here? Good. So you said that the story of Rama and Sita was an example of true love, great love. So then why did Sita have to go to Agni Pariksha to prove herself that? It was not to prove to Rama. It was not to prove to Rama that she was pure. There is a social question. Leave you. But I want to tell my people, believe in a winner. I may love you because I love you and I know you quite well. But if I want you to be accepted by them, then merely by saying, look, I love him very much, it will not be dedicated. Yes? Can you come here? I cannot hear you so well.
It is said that we attain moksha only when we are free from the obligations and maya of this mortal world. Then why is it that man has found out relationships and duties which are a sort of moksha for this mortal world?
Your question, let me understand your question. I'll put a question to you. What is good? Your question is, if our aim is moksha, if moksha implies freedom from obligations, then the question is, why are we required to undergo obligations? Is that your question? No.
There is a sense that we attain moksha only when we are free from the obligations of this mortal world, relationships, more for someone or something. Then why is it that we are made to undergo all this? Why is it that we can't prevent all this on our own will? So it is made a social obligation for us to undergo the relationship.
If world is maya, why should we be asked to go into this world at all? Is that your question? Yes? Nishkama, let me answer your question. First of all, your definition of moksha is not correct. Moksha is not freedom from obligations. It is true that some people do speak of it. Humko kya hai? Ye to sab maya hai. This is what is said very often. Many sadhus and so on, they tell you, ye sab kya hai, maya hai sab kuch. Chodo, chodo sabko. This is, according to me, very pernicious. It's not correct. If you ask anybody who has become liberated, he will say, I have now got a greater obligation than before. A truly liberated man, you see, Buddha, for example, when he got Nirvana, he took a vow and said, I have now an obligation to see that everyone in the earth becomes liberated. It's a greater obligation, he guessed. Therefore, whoever defines moksha as a state of becoming completely devoid of obligation is a wrong definition. Now, if moksha is a state of attainment of the highest obligation, then if you are asked to undergo obligations now, it is education for you to undergo lots of obligations one after the other. This is one answer. Second answer is, it is true that when you undergo this training of obligations, you come to learn very great secrets. The secret is that you attain to a condition in which you find no burden. Obligation remains, but normally obligation has two aspects, an action to be done and a burden to do it. In a moksha, action remains, obligation remains, but there is no burden. You reach such a stage that effortlessly you can do what you have to do. And that is moksha. To be absolutely calm within and torrential fire in outer life. To combine silence and activity, peace on the one hand, and intense activity, that is moksha. Yes. Yes. Yes, where is the deliverance? Quite true.
Yes, very true.
He was paying, correct.